Show, episode number 274. My name is John Morgan. Cold Coffee is with me, or I am with Cold Coffee, I guess you would say, since we are here at the Casa de Cold Coffee, the unofficial headquarters of the MMA Roadshow during quarantine.
The pandemic headquarters.
The pandemic headquarters of the MMA Roadshow.
Which I will say has recently gotten much nicer.
Bro. I mean, if we want to get into it, let's not bury the lead.
Let's not bury it.
I mean, there
game
is
changer. Game
a
done
huge
changed.
Upgrade to the studio here at Hathaway Productions. And you might say, well, what piece of equipment did you guys get? What have you added?
What did we get in here?
Have you done something to improve the audio as I'm listening? I'm trying to think. Is that a little more clear that I sound? Is there maybe a hint more of bass there? Is there a bit more audio clarity?
Or is there a slight hum of an electrical noise in the background?
No, we have not invested in anything that might – well, maybe it would improve the product.
I think it
improves the product. It is a beautiful refrigerator.
A little mini fridge.
Little mini fridge right here in the studio. So now – thanks to Mark Fellows, who pointed out our disgusting habit of basically just setting a case of frosty beverages right here with us and then just and going through them. And by the way, at the rate we go through them, they don't get too warm.
No,
it's the
end of the night ones that we're like, it's like if we're done taping, like you've left, I've finished editing, and I'm like, oh, I just try to reach in there just for one last one. It's warm
those
at
are
that point.
So
I'm just like,
those are not so good. Well, we no longer have that issue. We now have a mini fridge right here at the Casa de Cold Coffee inside the studio for Hathaway Productions. And by the way, stocked up this week, thank you, to Dustin Love, who has hounded me on Twitter and just saying, bro, sign up for a Venmo so I can send you money. And I'm like, I don't have Venmo. He's like, sign up for a Venmo and I will send you money
so funny.
To buy frosty beverages.
Is he overseas?
And I don't know. I didn't ask him where he's located.
It's weird because I've always went like either like the Zelle through like Chase or whatever.
Right.
Or then there was like PayPal. And then there's some other ones. But I remember the first time somebody told me Venmo, I was like,
it's a new generation, bro.
I was like, what is this Venmo?
We're getting old, man. We're getting old. Let's just be honest about it.
PayPal still rocks it, though.
I now have a Venmo account only because of Dustin Love.
Thanks, Dustin.
And
Love.
He sent us some cash this week to cover some frosty beverages. So
I like it.
No complaints there. And I will say the refrigerator, courtesy of the direction of Mark Fellows, is coming at an opportune time because it's 108 degrees outside today.
It is,
man.
So hot outside right now.
It's a little bit warm, and I will say that it does kind of make the room temperature of the place go up a little bit. So to now know that our frosty beverages are stored, it's a much improved product.
It's a workout because now we have to take a few extra steps.
Sure.
To get there. So it's
sure.
Like we're getting our steps in.
That's right.
We're
you got to get up and take three breaks. Steps over to the refrigerator versus
like
just
steps.
Sitting right here.
Yeah, it's like three steps.
We'll see. Maybe we might need to relocate it just so we don't
I
have to move.
I honestly thought about doing that, but then if it wasn't for the hum, I thought about putting underneath the table.
But it would pick up in the recordings.
But then I was afraid it would pick up in the recordings. It's still pretty silent. It's pretty quiet, but still you can hear it. Like when I'm in here by myself and I have all like the TV's off, the fans off, and then because I normally just. I don't know. I'm a freak that I pick up the different sounds, especially if you're just so used to being quiet in a vacuum. So the first thing I heard, I was like, is that the hum from the refrigerator? I was like, okay, it is. I was like, all right, well, let's push it over. So it's off to the side.
Right, so what we're trying to say is look at the sacrifice we're making for the community. Like, we want the audio quality to be on point. So because of that, we have arranged the studio in such a way that it forces us to get up and take three steps to
three.
Get to the cooler.
Maybe, I might be four. You're about three steps. I think I have an extra step because I'm a little bit on
those
the other
those are sacrifices
side of
you make for product
right.
quality. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's the kind of commitment we have to quality listening here at the
MMA
Roadshow.
So thank you, Roadshow listeners, for your suggestions and for your support. Due to you, we have some super cold beers now.
God bless them. God bless them. back on furlough for me this week, should say. And I'm actually taking some vacation next week since there's no MMA next week. I'm actually burning a few vacation days because it's been tough to slip
it?
Those in a little bit. I know.
What is
vacation
what is
days? Crazy.
How
we
do you
have
spell
those.
That?
We have some of those, believe it or not. I'm sliding some in since we don't have any fights next week. I'm sliding some in. So furlough for me this week, but I'm staying busy. I'm staying active. I've been getting up with a sense of purpose every day, trying to do something, enjoying some family time. I did a little Top Golf with the family earlier in the week. Also went to the pool and got sunburned as hell. Our community pool is finally back open, and it's all different now, of course, under COVID. You got to make an appointment, and you have to social distance, and you can only stay a certain amount of time. But took the family to the community pool, and that was nice. And staying underwater will not protect you from the sun's rays, apparently. That is something that I had forgotten. So I'm sunburned as hell, but we carry on.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the COVID, by the time you guys all are listening to this, or depending on the time I finally get it done, we will be under new rules, new COVID rules here in Nevada.
That's
and
right.
Masks are now mandated by the governor if you're out in public. So even if you're in an establishment that's private property, they want you to wear one as well. So if you go into a store, they expect you to still keep it on when
right.
you go into the store and stuff. So it's going to be a new look for Vegas.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's been kind of highly recommended, but now it's required.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm assuming obviously when you're at a restaurant or something, you take it off when you sit at
the
table.
Yeah, when you're eating and stuff like that.
You have to like lift it up and
that would take so long. And then imagine if you're trying to use like chopsticks, which is already can be difficult for some, and then to try to work it around or whatever. But yeah, it's interesting. I mean, part of it is, you know, there's been such a push to get through these phases, reopen, and we're currently in phase two, and they were hoping to get into phase three, but as of right now, phase three has, and I can't remember the fine details of what three actually is, but it just means more open of everything,
right.
Probably schools and all of the other stuff, but three is on an indefinite hold right now, so we are stuck in two. But part of it is this is their way of sort of saying, okay, we don't want to immediately freak out and go back the other way. So for those that are freaking out because they have to wear masks, it could be much worse if they just said, okay, hey, go back home. Now you got
to
stay
this
back home.
This is to try to prevent another shutdown.
This is to try to prevent that. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's not a big deal. I don't get why people are so frustrated about it. I put it on, and I mean, it's not that you can forget that it's there, because especially even when I'm – the one I have sort of rides up and I feel like it's going to go into my eyeballs, and it's not the most comfortable. And if you wear it long enough around your ears, it starts to, you know, get a little, you know, aggravated, but on the opposite, it's so much better than what you could be doing.
I thought what Governor Sisolak, which is our governor here in Nevada, what he said the other day that resonated to me was, hey, if back in March I had told you, you know, knowing what we know now, if back in March I had told you, hey, listen, we don't have to shut everything down. We can keep this economy going. But what I need you to do is I need you to wear a mask at all times, and I need you to stay 6 feet apart from people. Would you have done it? And I think a lot of people would say, yeah, because, dude, this past couple of months have been devastating, right, for so many people financially. And I'm with you, man. I don't get it. Like, I mean, I don't like wearing a mask. It's not the most comfortable thing in the world. But, dude, I mean, just wear the damn mask.
If that's what it takes to be able to go out and do stuff, and if you know that it is helping – that they have shown that it has helped to prevent it. I mean, even just having just that cloth barrier, these are not the, what is it, N95 ones, which are like the real hardcore ones that block so many of the particles. It just, they've shown that it does its part. And if that's the least it takes for me to still be able to go out and exist in society, I don't. It's not a big deal for me.
I agree. I just wear my Cyborg face mask covering that her and her team sent me. It's the most comfortable one I have. I wear that. I did order.
You didn't get the Hot Balls one yet?
No. Is he selling one too?
No.
No. That's right. I forgot about that. No. So I did. So I've been wearing that one. I did order one from Roots of Fight. It's like a Muay Thai one. It's pretty good. That's actually a two-pack. It's cool. So I like that one too. I was going to make one. But it was a little too expensive. I was going to try to make one. I'd say it was too expensive. I think the minimum would have been like $20, but I didn't know if it would turn out good. But I wanted to make like the Verdum face one.
We're gonna hand sew it or something.
No. You can like they have everybody now is trying to capitalize on. It. You can just like upload
just
a JPEG, upload a JPEG
to
the customer. I thought it might be funny. The Verdum face is a mask.
Yeah,
I mean,
I think it's funny.
Only to us.
In the bubble.
Like, if you were in
people
the public,
in the
people would be like,
people
"What is
in the
wrong
bubble.
With this dude?"
If not, they'd be like, "I don't get it. Why is he wearing that guy that's making that funny?"
And it would just and it would just be you know the mouth and the nose part, right? You wouldn't do the whole face. Like, you know what I mean? It would just be the mouth and the nose part.
Okay.
And then it would, and so you would look like you had the Verdum face on your face. Funny?
Eh, I guess I'd have to see it. Because I would want to just see the whole face.
Well, that's the thing, the cheapest you could do for one was like $20 or something. And I'm like, man, if I pay $20 and this looks stupid, like I'm not going to be happy that I just wasted $20. But if I pay $20 and it looks awesome, it'll be pretty funny.
Yeah. Well, dude, I think you'll get a kick out of this since I told you how recently I've been totally switched into Betty Crocker mode. And like this whole like pandemic thing's been making me do like arts. Well, I wouldn't even say arts and crafts. It's made me want to like bake and do other stuff. I actually contemplated getting a sewing machine to make my own and like just to do some other little stuff. Like,
okay.
I haven't worked on a sewing machine since like
The same man who has spent this entire afternoon talking to me about the process he uses for baking pies and cakes now. So just FYI, well, how it's going over here at the Casa de Cold Coffee.
It's a coffee crocker right over here. What's funny, I haven't worked on a sewing machine since theater in at Ohio State, you know, where part of it was like you went to the store and you would get fabric and you would get clothing with designs and you would lay it over the fabric, you cut it out and do all this other stuff. It's like a blur. I don't even really remember doing it, but I have a pair of like pajamas that I made in college as part of like one of the classes you had to make for theater class. But when this whole thing came out and was like I was ordering my mask, I was so frustrated because the first mask I ordered was supposed to come like within 10 days or whatever, got backlog, I canceled, then it set me back another 10 or 15 days. I was like I could probably just try to hand sew something. I was like, but man, it'd be cool to just be able to sew something up. And then it brought back all these memories of like.
It would actually be cool.
It would be kind of fun, you know, just do like arts and crafts stuff or whatever. But like sewing machines are not that cheap, especially if you get like a decent one. So I was looking at one that was like 200 and some bucks. And I was like, stop. Think about this. Are you going to use this? Are you going to use this? So it's still on my save for later list of Amazon is a sewing machine.
I'll be honest, man. I'm 42 years old. I've never used a sewing machine in my life. I've hand stitched some stuff, like make little repairs or stuff that
they're
need to be done.
They're a little bit more difficult than what they seem, you know, especially when it just comes to threading it. Once you get it threaded, once you get going, it's not as bad. But if you do it the wrong way and you get it messed up, it's completely frustrating. But I think it's with anything, you know. Once you get into the hang of something, you create something, you make something for yourself. It's just kind of cool, you know, but that's part of what this whole being at home pandemic thing has done for me is I've decided to pick up and do things that, you know.
You're baking more and about to start sewing. Yeah. I love it. You're going to make a great wife someday. No, that's sexist. I shouldn't say that. God, I can't believe that came out of my mouth. I'm so sorry.
If I could be lucky enough someday.
I'm so sorry. All right, listen, normally I don't like to go back and talk about previous events. Just because, you know, by the time it's Thursday, Friday rolling around, we're looking towards the next one, and we certainly are. But it has been a weird week, you know, with me being on furlough. I haven't been as hardcore covering this event, and last week was such a crazy one for me because of all the involvement of fighters that have coached my son, basically.
Yeah,
that spent
you
time.
Talked to any of them afterwards?
I have, and the one that's sticking around is Max Roshkoff, and I talked about this last week on the and a half episode, so those of you that support us over at patreon.com/MMAroadshow will have heard this to a degree, but I didn't want to not have the general audience hear it as well. I was to be honest with you, man, I am a little shocked at the amount of backlash that Robert Drysdale has received for his work in the corner on this fight. And I think a little bit of it has kind of calmed down over the course of this week as other fighters have chimed in and as he's done some interviews and Max has done a couple interviews. And I think it's changed a little bit, but I feel like I saw a lot of outrage to start with. And I just didn't think it was deserved. And this is not to me as someone who has spent time in the gym with these guys, watched them teach my son. I mean, of course, I have a little bit more of a relationship because, I've seen them sacrifice their time. I mean, they get paid for it, but still, they spent time with my kid helping him teach him martial arts and teaching him lessons in life. I'm separating myself from that. What Robert Drysdale did, I didn't find any error with it at all. There is a huge difference between a fighter who is physically done and a fighter who is mentally done. And I think at that moment, Max was having a little bit of mental weakness. Man, I think he was having a little bit of a mental break. And I thought Robert was trying to do the right thing in coaching him back and getting back and using the 60 seconds he has to say, hey, I believe in you, man. Even if you don't believe in yourself, I believe in you. You got this. We can still do this to get you back on the right path. You know, to it was funny. I mean, I was watching the fights, or my wife was watching the fights, obviously at home, as I was there inside the Apex. But we started talking about it afterwards. She's like, "If that was my son, that's the way I would teach my. That's what I would be saying to my son. Like, don't give up. You can do this. Let's push through." And I think there's a big difference between a fighter who is taking far too much physical damage and can't go back out there.
Yeah.
And he did take some damage.
He took some damage.
But I didn't think it was to the point where you're like, this is egregious to send him back out there. I thought it was a mental break. The one thing I would say, and at the end, I mean, by the way, Rob also deserves credit that the inspector came in and says, does he want to fight? And he did say, no, he doesn't want to fight. So it's not like he never relented.
I heard that part, but I don't remember seeing that or hearing that at the end.
I feel like
the only thing I saw on the video, I could see the doctor talking to the ref. And then it looked like the doc was tipping off to the ref, like, hey, go say something.
Well, by the way, and I actually talked to Mark Smith, who's the referee as well, who I know pretty well from doing like Tough Enough shows and things like that. And he said he actually heard Max talking as well, so he came in right away. He knew right away to come in and ask. So I think it was said that the inspector called it off. It didn't. Mark was the one that came in and saw away.
Yeah, because I never remember seeing the inspector say anything to the doc or whatever.
Somebody reported that it was, and I can't remember who reported it that way, that it was the inspector. It wasn't the inspector. It was Mark Smith who heard what was going on. But Robert Drysdale did ultimately say, hey, he wants to quit. Now, here's what I would say. It wouldn't have changed much because we all had the audio. We all heard it. We all saw what was going on. I think from an optic standpoint, and again, it's just kind of semantics at this point, I think Rob could have protected Max a little bit more and not say he wants to call it. You know, say, hey, we're not going to continue. You know, kind of step out and take it. Hey, I can't allow him to go out, or I'm not going to let, you know, to own the stoppage a little bit more than putting it on Max. But at the end of the day, that's really just more of a, hey, you know how you could have handled this a little bit better?
Yeah.
And it wouldn't have changed anything. So I don't know. I wanted to say that because I feel like Rob caught a lot of grief that was unnecessary, and I didn't think it was fair. I thought what he did was right. I think you've heard a lot of fighters come out and say the same thing since. I was saying it on Saturday night as well. I think what Rob did was right. He tried to coach his fighter through a moment of mental weakness. He wasn't trying to send him out there on some suicide mission and get his guy hurt. For people that don't know, they live together. I mean, Rob gave Max a place to live as he developed in his career. I mean, he cares about him that much. He's invested in him so much. So,
do you think that made him maybe too comfortable with him to not think that he got to the point? And I don't mean to cut off your point. Because I agree with you. He did what he needed to do. But at some point, you need to then eventually say, are you sure, Max? Do you want me to call this?
But he did. He was like, he did say that. I mean, you could hear it in his voice. You could hear, he was like, are you sure you want to do this? You know what I mean? Like, and I think Robert knew.
See, I never remember hearing that.
Robert knew the type of grief that was going to come associated with this. He knew, I mean, this is going to stick with Max Rochkoff for the rest of his career. It's either going to be a moment that, I mean, this is a crossroads moment for him. He is either going to find something and dig deep from this and just launch into a stratosphere because of what he learned in this moment, or he's going to find out that this isn't what I thought it was. Maybe I'm not cut out to do this. And I think it's going to go serious one way or the other. But he did say, are you sure you want to do this? And he said it in such a way where it was like, and he didn't say this, but I could tell from his tone, he's saying, are you sure you want to do this? Because there are severe repercussions that are going to come from this. And there have been. I mean, I think there's been overall some support, but of course there's been fan backlash behind the scenes. You know, the UFC brass hasn't been excited with it. I know Dana kind of trashed him at first, and then he came out and kind of defended him a little bit as well and said he had the right to do it. But, I mean, look, this is going to be a big hurdle for Max to come back from.
Yeah. I mean, I remember that night after it happened, I was saying, like, this is one of those things that he – just like Dana said, there's no shame for what he's been able to do and where he's taken himself, what he's been able to do. But at some point, if it is a mental thing, and if he just got to the point where he felt he was broken, that's the kind of thing where you need to really decide, well, is this really for me?
Right.
He could have a career as a coach, as a trainer, as a whatever, but it doesn't mean that he needs to be a UFC fighter to do that. But I thought that was one of those points that if it wasn't to the point where he was – actually hurting so bad, and then he just felt like I realized I gave my all and I can't get past this person. So mentally he decided to shut down. But at some point, at that point, you got to decide, well, if this is at this level, am I is this right for me?
I know. You're absolutely right. He's going to have to look within himself. I think fatigue was a big part of it, and I think it is the first time he's been tested in his career. He was 5-0 with 5 first-round stoppages. Nobody had ever been able to withstand his grappling attacks and been able to do it. And you know, we talked about it going into it. I mean, the guy had faced Mark Mattson. He had faced Davi Hamos. Like, he had faced some top-level grapplers.
Those are good guys.
And Austin Hubbard was able to weather this storm as well. You know, so I still believe
Austin's striking was great. I mean, like, I think, one, he came in also, too, with a little chip on his shoulder, too, because he knew that he was getting put up against a guy that the UFC was trying to push up. I mean, he clearly knew that. And I just think he put on probably one of the best striking displays that he could have for that night, you know. Yeah. And then once he started realizing that he was hurting him, then he just got fired up, and then he looked even better, you know.
So, digging to the body.
As much as people want to say that Max is the one that, you know, he either couldn't, you know, take it or gave up. Also, Austin had a wonderful performance. So a lot of people aren't giving Austin the credit for what he was able to
do. And Max even wanted to make sure that was more of a storyline. You know, the little conversation I had with him, he was like, I wish people were talking more about how great Austin looked
Austin
and how he dealt with a guy that had some hype.
Yeah, because, I mean, Max is – I mean, everything that I've seen when I've seen him train people and everything I know that I've seen in his footage and seeing what you've talked about him and seeing the results of what he's able to do, you know he's a badass. So for Austin to go in and do what he did, it wasn't like Max just went in and had a bad night. Austin just went in and was the better person that particular night. So I think there's – this is either going to be a crossroads for Max where he's either going to decide, you know, it wasn't my night. I just got caught up in it, whatever. I'm going to take another go at it. But that's going to be one of those decisions he's have. And when it came to, you know, Drysdale, whether or not – when I was saying about is he too familiar, you know, especially with living with something, you know – you know that what somebody needs to hear to push him. And I just wonder if he wasn't so close, if this just was a person that he trains and that he doesn't have as close a relationship, if he would have switched sooner to the point to where he was like, okay, clearly I can see. If he wasn't as invested in Max, if he could clearly see, okay, this fighter is done, instead of saying, bro, I know you, I live with you, I see you, I know everything that you're capable, I know that in my heart of hearts, I could just, if I say one more time, maybe you're going to eventually say, okay, but maybe if it was just another person that he trains, maybe he would have made that switch sooner. And that's the part, when I listened to it, I never felt like I heard the part where he was just like, it didn't feel. It felt more like an afterthought at the end when they're separating. They're saying, "All right, you got to get out of here." When he was like, "Okay, now I need to think about should we call this off now?" And and then if he did say something like, "Yeah, this is over," or whatever, I would just wish I would have heard that while the TV was there watching it, that decision would have happened sooner. And I think it was just maybe they weren't so close that would have happened sooner. Because, I mean,
that's
no
fair,
doubt.
But that, and then the question goes, is that a good thing or a bad thing? You know
that's
what I mean?
I mean, I think it's good and bad both ways. I mean, I think it's definitely good that he knows how hard he could push him. But at some point, you have to realize your own sort of faults, too, and say, am I too close to the situation that I didn't realize? I missed the signs to pull this fighter out. Like, the fighter clearly was giving it. It's good to push back a little bit and say, are you sure? Are you sure? Come on. You're a fucking winner, blah, blah, blah. Okay, this is the fifth time. My boy has asked me to fucking get him out of here. At what point does it trigger? Did it need to be the 23rd time? You know, and I'm not trying to be funny with that, but I just think there could be a point where the closeness might have been the downfall, because he knows there's nobody probably better to understand what Max is able to do. And he let that he gave his all, and I can't fault him for it.
But I think that's what
sense.
You want behind you. That's the kind of support you want. I mean,
true.
If he had a broken arm or a broken leg, or you know, he's like, I'm pretty sure I tore my ACL.
Yeah.
You know, which obviously Josh Emmett did later in the night and continued on. But I mean, if somebody's nursing a real physical injury and they're like, I can't go back out there. But I think that Robert saw that this isn't physical, man. Yeah. This is mental. This is emotional. This is psychological. We can get past this.
And this probably doesn't relate at all, but for some reason it just popped in my head. There was when I played music, and I still play out with myself. when I played in a band, but as I was coming up playing in multiple bands, there was at one point where I played with one of my best friends I've known since I was like in the fourth grade, one of the first people when I moved to Gahanna, a little suburb of Columbus. And as he was a guy I played, was a good musician in his own right, you know, he was a good friend. And I felt like, man, if we just keep playing music, man, we'll get there. We'll get there someday. And then when I started playing with better players, it got to one point where as much as I wanted to support him and give him everything, there was a point where he wasn't able to cut it. He wasn't able to do it. But for the longest point, I couldn't not want him along. I wanted to keep saying, no, guys, this is good. Let's keep doing this. Keep doing it.
Right.
Until it reached a point where it was like, you know, he's holding us back, right? You have to at some point cut somebody loose, even though you want and you believe in them and you know that they're capable of good things. At some point, are they really, you know, meant to be there? You know, so I don't know if that kind of relates or not,
but it's a proving moment for Max, because I agree. Like, listen, I've called the guy's fights, so I've seen him up close in competition.
Yeah,
I've seen him in the gym, both working out and coaching. I believe with my eye, with what I've seen, with my knowledge of the sport, I believe he has the talent to perform at
the
highest level.
He has the talent completely.
However, this is going to be a make or break moment for him, man. And whether it means maybe he has to go back to the regional scene, maybe he has to go back to the contender series, or if he believes he can continue to cut it in the UFC, this is going to be a testing moment. He's either going to recover from this or not. I do not believe that this will just be, it was a fight that happened and nothing really changed. I believe this will either be the moment that Max realizes, here's what I have to do, and these are the changes I'm going to make sure that never happens again, or the moment he goes, you know what, man, I chased this for a while, and my heart's not really into it.
And he made it. He made it to the uppermost echelon of the sport. And, you know, it's there's no shame if it goes either way, you know. But, you know, and you're right. This could be that point that it just takes that moment. And what's funny is that the short-term memory of UFC fans or any fans for any particular sport out there, this is the kind of thing. Max decides he's all in and it goes in and just starts starching people. This will be obviously always a hiccup in the road, you know, to greatness. People will always remember it, but history and it is always sort of tinted. It's tinted glasses and eventually it will change.
It could be a great story. It could be a great story. You know, man, here I was on top of the world. I thought, man, nobody can hang with me. 5 first round stoppages. I'm just waxing people.
Yep.
And then I got tested, and then I was like, "Oh, and then that." I mean, it could be a great moment.
He looked good in the first round.
Great learning moment.
He looked good in the first round. I mean, I don't know if then it was just the stamina, other stuff, and just started playing it. And he started taking that. And then I think it was Austin that kicked in the second, because he rocked Austin a couple times in the first one. But I think in the second, Hubbard just took over. But I know we ran really long on that
we didn't really get a chance to talk about it. And it's a situation that I am closer to than, you know, like I said, I don't normally like to look back, but I feel like I had kind of a unique perspective on it. But I mean, I tried to separate myself from that perspective with my observation of this. And I don't believe Drysdale did anything wrong. And I don't believe that Max did anything wrong. I just believe this is going to be, you know, kind of that testing moment for him. Does he want to do this or not? And if he does, he can rebound from it.
Yep.
If he doesn't, that's okay too.
Yep.
That's okay too.
No shame in it.
One other thing I wanted to review that has kind of been making the rounds a little bit, and I found it really interesting because I heard UFC President Dana White trot it out a couple times, and that is the line about fighting, that this is not a career, it's an opportunity. Now, if you're a long-time listener of the MMA Roadshow, you'll definitely have heard this before because we've talked about it before. And I thought the timing of it was funny because of the whole, you know, hashtag Joe Silva stories right now.
Yeah.
That was an old Joe Silva saying. And I think it's been misinterpreted a little bit because I know people want to go at Dana and they want to go at the UFC and they want to go at the pay structure. And we'll talk about all that in a second too because it's all fair discussion. But what I think is they're trying to take that and manipulate it to be like, well, what are you saying? I can't make career-type money in MMA.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Understand that when Joe Silva said that and Sean Shelby, you know, adopted it as well, and that's where, you know, Dana White, at least I think it originated. It might have originated from Sean, but I think it originated from Joe Silva. So if I'm wrong, I apologize. I'll ask Sean the next time I see him. But the idea was that to not come into MMA thinking, I can do this for 15, 20, 25 years.
Yeah.
You can't.
Yeah.
Your body does not allow you to do that. When you have a career, you're thinking, okay, I got time, man. I can build and I can maneuver and I can move and I'm going to work towards retirement and all that. When Joe Silva and Sean Shelby would tell these fighters this, it was to understand that, look, you have got to come in maximize your income, maximize your potential as quickly as possible. Put money in the bank and set yourself up for the next phase of life. In addition to it not being a career because you can't do it for 20, 25 years, it also doesn't
unless
have pension.
Diego Sanchez.
Unless you're Diego Sanchez, and then you can do it and you're actually getting younger. As somehow you're actually Benjamin Button or whatever out there in your MMA career. But and to also understand that there is no retirement or 401k or whatever to fall back on. So the idea is, you know, when you have an opportunity to fight, fight. Don't sit out. Take fights. Bank that money. And also make sure that you're setting yourself up for the next phase in your life. So if that means, you know, putting away money for your kids' education, putting away money for a business that you want to buy, a venture, whatever, all that. So I wanted to clarify that because longtime listeners will have heard that before, but more recent people might not. And I think it was being manipulated a little bit into what it actually was supposed to originally mean.
You know, it's like that thing that you hear all the time, the whole fake news things where people say that, oh, they're taking things out of context and, you know, using a bit of a phrase instead of the whole phrase. Because when you explain it like that, it makes complete sense. And it makes – I don't see how anybody could be like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, no, that makes complete sense. But when you take that one line out of a greater conversation – yeah, it does make it sound bad when they're just like, bro, don't. This ain't a career, man. You're just going to get in there.
Yeah.
And knowing the parties that are probably involved, like, you know, knowing Joe Silver or something like that, he would never shortcut it like that. And even Sean, who's, you know, less wordy than Joe is, it makes sense that it'd be bigger. But you're right. You're right. I mean, like, and it's like any particular thing. I mean, if you know that you have an opportunity to get in somewhere, you want to maximize the most you can. But, you know, in a sense, nothing's guaranteed, especially in the way our structure of work in just the United States, the whole – what's the word? Work – pay to work to hire, whatever. They could fire you for any reason.
Oh, yeah,
I forget what the damn term is. But they pretty much can just –
at will, right to work.
At will, yeah, right to work or whatever, where they can pretty much just say – hey, you know, things have been great, but, you know, we're going to let go of your position, and they don't really have to have a reason, you know, and that's just an everyday job. So imagine being in one where you are, in a sense, an entertainer. It's even more fickle, you know. But
it was interesting. I saw it being manipulated a little bit, and I said, you know what, I want to talk about that because I don't think the people that are hearing it was an interesting time considering the hashtag Joe Silva stories. Because I've never really heard Dana say that a lot, and he said it a couple times this past week.
I bet you know, those guys were thick as thieves. And if one was saying it, I guarantee the others picked up on it.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I think that's one he just pulled from the memory banks.
Yeah, who doesn't pick up a phrase from a buddy here or there, you know?
Absolutely. All right, so I said we were going to talk about the money thing a little bit. I did, for MMA Junkie this past week when I was working, a Twitter mailbag. And normally we do a video segment, but we kind of got our wires crossed. We ended up not shooting a video for it. But there was an interesting
because I would have had to
because you would have had to edit it.
That was a long day.
There was Tan Nguyen was the guy that wrote this out. It was at Tan Nguyen 2013 on Twitter. He said his question was, should Masvidal have taken the contract negotiation private instead of via Twitter? In most jobs, you don't negotiate contract with your employer via Twitter. That is just bad faith. And I thought it was interesting because I thought it was a good question, a very fair question, and I hope my answer made sense because I thought that, first of all, it was kind of cool that somebody would say it because I know it's easy to just go, yeah, I love Masvidal, because who doesn't love Masvidal, man? He's an absolute gangster, right? But you say, man, normally when you're negotiating with your bosses, man, you don't do it on Twitter. Like, that's not a good look. You know, if I started going out and, like, talking about my contract with USA Today and I'm, you know, talking about Simon Simano or talking about, you know, Chris Perrone or Mark Hyland, you know, our guys at the USA Today office, you know, it's probably not going to go well for me. But my answer was this, and I think I'm right here, that it depends on what Jorge Masvidal wanted to accomplish. And it's going to roll into this John Jones talk as well that happened on the Steve-O podcast today as well. Because my answer was this. If Jorge Masvidal is only interested in getting the best possible deal for himself, then I think absolutely keeping it private, keeping it behind the scenes is the better way to negotiate. And you've seen some fighters come out and say the same thing because the UFC, Dana White especially, doesn't exactly respond well to public pressure. That's not really a fan of the way he likes to do things. If you want to go against him, he'll be happy to go against you. But if you do things behind closed doors, I think you get things accomplished better. So if the idea was to get the best possible deal for himself, then I think keeping it private would have been better. But if the idea is that he really wants to be a beacon for change and to try to help people and try to help the whole economy of the sport for fighters improve,
yeah,
then I think absolutely. Speaking publicly, getting fighters talking, getting everybody, you know, discussing it is the right thing to do. Similar to what John Jones came out in these recent comments with Steve-O, where he said, look, I'm cool sitting out 2 or 3 years because I want to get, you know, a deal. Okay, cool. If we're just on a deal for yourself, good, bro. You know, he said, I want to, you know, try to help change things for, you know, some of the lower level fighters who aren't getting right. what I think they deserve. And if that's really the case, if that's honestly the motivation, then I think, yes, being as vocal about it as possible and talking about it as openly as possible is the right way to go. I just will say that it's still got to come with some kind of organization beyond these fighters, because as big of a star as John Jones is, as big of a star right now as Jorge Masvidal is, the UFC will go on without them. I mean, Gilbert Burns, you know, I don't think you can blame Gilbert Burns for stepping into that role and saying, I'll take that paycheck. I'm trying to put food on my table. Yep. And I think unless you get everybody on the same page and willing to organize, and I just don't think even guys as big as John Jones and Jorge Masvidal holding out is going to do anything to change the structure as a whole.
It's true. I mean, that's the whole thing of the whole collective bargaining. It needs to have everybody. You know, as big as we know a fight week of Conor, and, you know, how much money that his fights were bringing in when he was fighting more regularly, you know, it seemed like people thought, like, oh, the UFC be nothing without Conor. Where's Conor now? The UFC seems to be just fine, you know. And the same thing will happen for these single fighters here or there. What really is going to hurt them is when they all group together and are willing to do that. But unfortunately, a lot of them have families. A lot of them have been hurting. A lot of them need money. You know, if I lost my job and a friend was at a place and there was a possibility of an opening there, of course I'm going to be trying to get it. And then if it was like me or him, I love you, bro, but I'm going to try to get that job, you know, and that's the thing. I mean, it's tough to ask fighters as a whole or any particular person in any sort of career when you're in need to sit back knowing that maybe eventually this will pay off and this will help us all out in the end. But to ask, you know, those that are in need to step away is a hard lift. I mean, it's easy when you have a little bit of a padding to kind of take that time off and say, well, I'm going to wait for whatever. Or to even say, hey, come on, everybody, join me. I'm sitting out until I get a fight. It's hard to say that when you have a wife at the home or a husband at home waiting for you to bring home a check and you have kids and you have something to support. It's hard for that to happen. But, you know, with part of these guys too, and I can see Dana's point to a degree, most of these guys that are asking for more money and they want whatever, they just recently did contracts.
Right.
So you just renegotiate, and Dana said that too. Like, we just renegotiated a contract. If you were going to hold out and do whatever, why didn't you do it then? We made an agreement. We signed it. Now stand up to your word. And then now that it's not what you want to hold out for more, now you're going to go against your word. You're going to go against once you sign on a piece of paper. I get it. They need more money. They deserve more money. But you put your word on a piece of paper, and you can't just say, oh, well, I was a naive kid, and they paid me off with $100,000 cars. You were still a grown-ass man. We all make decisions. We all make mistakes. If you made a mistake and you didn't get what you get, you own up to it, and you just do it because that's what we do. You know, I mean, who hasn't, maybe made a decision and you just have to live up to it, and then you live and you learn, you do it, and that be either your next negotiation. If you want to go on the Twitter and you want to go wherever and you raise a little bit of stink and get people to behind it, if anything, I thought Masvidal and some of these guys are putting their name out there, they're throwing a little bit of stink, knowing that even if they don't take it so far, they can then go back behind the closed doors, like you said, and maybe renegotiate. But you have to find that point where you stop. You put a little bit out there, get the buzz going, and then you go back behind.
If you try to dig in against the UFC and Dana White, he'll dig in against you.
Yeah, if you're going to do it and you're going to go all in and you're going to say this is what it is, then you got to be willing to stick with that line and do it.
And if you are,
just go all in. And they might as well then just be like, hey, fighters, rally up behind
me.
That's
what I want to see. There has to be a next step to it. Just saying I'm going to sit out for 2 or 3 years, the UFC will say, all right, you've already seen Dominic Reyes is like, cool. Have fun on the sidelines. We'll fight for the belt. Yep. Me and Jan will go at it. You know, I mean, it will move on. So you got to have the next step of that is now let's lead some organization. And it takes everybody. And that's the hard part, is getting everybody on board. Because
you want to get people on board. How about these guys? And this will never happen. All right, but say some of these guys that are collectively have done better. So say Connor, say John Jones, somebody that's making $5 million or more a thing. Say, guys, we're going to hold off. This is what we're trying to do, but I understand what you guys are going through. So me and Connor, we just put $2 million here in a pile, and I'm going to give you personally, the fighters that are willing to do it, I'm going to give you a little bit of a buffer. Say if you're 2020 or whatever, I'm going to give you a little bit of a buffer. I'm going to go as so far to say, here's my own money. Join me in this collective thing. Hold out from the UFC. And then let's really do this.
$2 million would go quick, though.
You know what I think? It will, but if you have, say, 30 fighters that jump on with you, 30 fighters subtracted from the current needed roster, the UFC, I forget what the numbers they have to hit. They have to hit their numbers to get these.
Yeah, like 42 events.
They have to hold 42 events to get either the full amount or start hitting performance sort of thresholds is how I sort of think if they don't hit these amounts. If there's not enough fighters to do this, of course the UFC will try to go out and grab whatever, but if you make a stand for it and push it to where you're affecting their bottom line where they don't have enough active roster fighters to meet the events, that will really start making them change their tune.
So here's – all right. So one thing I will say about this, and you are right. The UFC is contracted to do 42 events. Now, I always point this out to people. Please understand that every TV contract has a contracted amount of events. It's not like the UFC is in some kind of special deal where they have to – I mean, the NBA is scheduled to put on so many games, that sort of thing. Everybody has deals. I will say that I think the UFC is in a pretty unique spot where if they don't get the right amount of events done by the end of the year, if ESPN tries to come to them and say, hey, you didn't deliver, they could say, hey, remember when we were ready to hold an event and you told me not to? You don't get to back out now. You're the one that told me to shut down UFC 249 in California. So I think they're in a pretty unique position right there where they could battle
event,
a little
bit. Only gives them one event.
but he could go, and I would have kept going every week after that.
Yeah.
So, I don't even think ESPN would push back on him, but I do think that when you talk about that. Here's what I think it would take, and I love the discussion, the open discussion. In that Twitter mailbag thing, I remember a little note I put in there. I remember the first time I heard a fellow journalist say that they had it written into their employment contract that anytime they fly, it has to be business class. And I was like, I never even thought of that. Like, I never even imagined you could get something like that in your employment agreement, you know? Unfortunately, I still don't have anything like that in my employment agreement to date.
You'll never get that.
I'll never get that. I thought it was cool to hear it and go, oh, wait a minute. I didn't know I could ask for that. I didn't know that's something like a discussion point. So I love the fact that people are throwing out there like, hey, here's what I got, and here's what I got, and here's what I should get. I love the fact. I think that discussion will educate fighters. It'll educate managers. It'll help people understand. So in the lack of organization, at least having an open forum I think helps move everything forward, right? At least educates people to know what they can do at the table. Here's what I think it would take. I don't think you're ever going to be able to get everybody on the roster to sign an agreement. I just don't. There's too many guys that are making 12 and 12. They'll be like, well, wait, if I don't sign the agreement, like I might get bumped up the card a little bit and get an opportunity or whatever. You know what I mean?
They're still going to get 12 and 12. I hope they realize
that. Yeah, well, but they're hoping.
But they're going to get that chance for the 12 and 12.
That's what I'm saying. They'll say, hey, man, I get in there. Yeah, you're right. They don't even have the capability of holding it. In fact, that would be pretty interesting if the UFC ever did organize. I wonder if you'd have to have something like, listen, if you're making less than 15 to 50, you don't have to be a part of our strike because we understand
that
you still need to work.
Yeah, I think the first part of it, if they did collect order, there would have to be a guaranteed minimum like every other league.
Yeah.
You know, whether it be 25, 25, 50,000 a fight or something, or just get rid of the.
But I mean, like
bonus.
I've never been part of a union.
I think Major League Baseball.
I've never been part of
like
a union. Do unions, like, maybe you don't know either, but I've never been part of one. I mean, if a union says, hey, we're all going to strike, is there some kind of threshold where, like, if you're making. Like, if you're barely putting food on the table, do you have to walk out of your job, too?
You have to walk out. That's part of the thing. But part of the money, they're supposed to – they usually will try to give a little stipend to their people. They have
that's
a little
good.
Something they give – oh, well, being unions. I mean, there was a point in time where unions are awesome, and there was a point in time here where I was trying to get in the local union because I knew they were getting higher paid than when I was doing the same sort of roadie work for a different organization that wasn't a union.
Right.
One. So – It's like one of those things. It's like you want to work for a union because you know they get better rates or whatever.
Right.
But when you look at it afterwards, it's so much BS overhead that you don't need it. It's practically corrupt half the stuff. Like unions,
always seems that way, right?
Yeah, unions. There was a point in time where
like they
unions
served a very
really
valuable
necessary.
Service at one point. Like they helped change
nowadays,
the American workforce.
Nowadays, they're just as dirty as anything else.
So here's what I think it would take. I think it would take. What if every single UFC champion, every single reigning UFC champion, got together and said, "Now, not this retirement stuff. Not yeah. I'm retiring." Or I'm walking away from the sport. That doesn't help anything. They're going to move on. I mean, look, they've already got another bantamweight title fight set up. Henry Cejudo's in the rearview mirror. Not we're retiring, but if every single reigning UFC champion got together and said, you know what? None of us are fighting until this wage percentage thing is addressed. I think that, at the very least, can you imagine the amount of press coverage that would get? Every reigning UFC champion has said, we're not willing to fight until we get a chance to discuss this revenue sharing percentage and how it works for everybody. I think that would be effective, and I think the coverage it would get from mainstream media would be very, very effective. And you know, those guys and gals at the top, they can all survive, you know, sitting out for a year, 2 years. Yeah. They've all got money in the bank. I'm sure they wouldn't want to. I mean, that's prime financial opportunity for them, so that's a window of time that they would be giving away in their athletic prime. So I'm not saying that it would be easy for them. I'm just saying it's more possible for them than the guy that's making 12 and 12 that's just trying to put food on the table. And I think it would be a real interesting position for the UFC, because if you're the UFC, I mean, you have to address that, right? Like if a guy retires, like look at what Dana says now. Hey, if Henry Cejudo wants to come back and fight Volkanovski, would you do that? And he just goes, Cejudo's retired. What are you talking about? Next question. You know, yeah. He can just move on. Hey, what about Conor McGregor? Conor's retired. Next question. But if every champ got together and said, we're not fighting until this is addressed, yeah, the UFC could strip every one of them, but I don't think you'd be able to strip that without a hell of a lot of backlash to saying, you're really willing to strip every single one of your champions rather than come to the bargaining table and talk about these numbers openly?
Yeah.
So being as how I don't think you'll ever be able to get everybody on the roster to sign their card or to sign up for the union or to sign up for the association, I think that would be a way to make significant change.
I mean, it would certainly – and I think when the part of the thing too is that I think Dana or just even all the fighters assume like, all right, even if we did this thing, you know, everybody's going to expect them. Oh, we need to have half of everything. Even if they started small and were able to collectively get something where they could just get guaranteed a yearly sort of stipend. So, you know, say the UFC gets whatever, $150 million a year, 100 and something a year out of this TV deal. If you take, and I quickly did some numbers, $22 million, say the roster's 450 fighters.
Right.
And you take a $22 million, which if it is, say, $150 million or even at $100 million, so you take less than, you know, 25% of this one-year thing and allot it to the fighters, you could give every one of the fighters on the roster $50,000. So as a base sort of pay, here's $50,000. Most of us would say $50,000, if I budget it the right way, I can make it through the year.
Yeah, you could at least cover your basic expenses.
You cover your basic expenses depending on how you live. I mean, it depends on where you live.
I'm not talking about me covering my basic expenses. Yeah. I'm just saying, yeah. Your training and food and rent and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and just thinking, you know, so that's not counting any fight money. That's just here's your $50,000 as part of the TV deal. You know, here's your $50,000, and then you still get your fighter money. If they could even just get it and start small, I think the big thing is that they want to come in and just be like, all right, we want to come in, we want half of everything, we want this.
Well, I saw Masvidal said in a tweet one time, he's like, maybe we talk about 30%. If it's 18, maybe we talk about 28 to 30 or something.
Yeah.
I think because I do think it is fair to argue on the other side. Now, when you hear that they just paid out $300 million to, you know, Hollywood investors, that makes you start questioning some things. But I do think it's important to figure out, or to point out, I should say, when you have these discussions, realize the UFC does have very significant overhead. Much more significant overhead.
They work around, it's a revolving credit line practically.
Well, no, but I'm talking
about revolving lines of debt.
Sure, but I don't mean just the debt payment, and you're right, the debt payment is huge, but I just mean in the way the business is run, like versus like a boxing promotion.
Yeah.
A boxing promotion doesn't employ 300 people, you know what I mean? It doesn't have offices all over the world. I mean, the UFC is done differently, right? I mean, it's the business model is a little bit different, and they also don't have you know, the multi-billion-dollar television deals that the NFL or the NBA and that sort of thing has. So, you know, I like it when Masvidal says, hey, why don't we come in and we're not talking about 50%, but maybe 30%. If we're doing 18 now, can we do 30? I mean, I think that's a reasonable starting point.
Makes sense. I mean, if you could people are going to hate me, one particular person. I mean, if you could pay staff for 2 months to not do a fucking thing, can you throw a little bit of money? Can you throw a little bit of money to your fighters for doing nothing?
Yeah, one person's going to hate you for that. Anyway, it's an interesting discussion to have. So, so long story short, I thought that was a great question because I think if Masvidal and Jones, for that matter as well, if they want to do what's best for them, they're better off doing it behind closed doors. If they want to do what's better for everybody, then doing it in public I think is fine. But remember, you just holding out is not going to change anything for the collective. It's just not. It's if you really, honestly, your motivation is to change things for everybody, you've got to do something that affects everybody and involves everybody.
And like I've said before, you almost need an earth-shattering world event to find that perfect time to do it. Now, when could that possibly happen?
I mean, you just never see earth-shattering
world events.
It
just never really ever happens, you know. But should one of those happen, I would think that would be the best time to try something like this.
I think I see what you're suggesting there. Listen, by the way, I should say if you like what you're hearing, do us a favor. Log into Apple Music or wherever you get your podcasts. You wouldn't get a podcast on Apple Music, would you? You'd get it on Apple Podcasts.
Well, we can sing.
Hey, you don't want that. You definitely don't want that. Cold Coffee's got some. Cold Coffee might be able to sing. He's got some music skills. You don't want to hear that from me.
It's the Filipino in me.
Make sure wherever you get your podcast, you log in there. Make sure you subscribe first and foremost. That helps. But then if you can go a little extra second, man, take a second. Give us a rating. Hopefully it's that 5 stars. You can review us. That would help, man. All that stuff helps us kind of pop up the charts a little bit and get noticed. You can leave us feedback. We always do appreciate that. Or if you want to step your game up to the next level,
that game up,
we mentioned it earlier, patreon.com/the MMA Roadshow, the exclusive home of the and a half post-fight podcast that we do every single week. Even though I'm on furlough this week, I'll still be doing it on Saturday night.
Yeah, you will.
And those are fun. I enjoy those shows. Basically, what we do there is
because there's no me usually.
By the way, it's not Cold Coffee's not only there because he's busy working and editing video. But what I like to do, you know, kind of give you my thoughts on the night, but also work in like some audio from UFC president Dana White, from the night's featured fighters, from maybe some undercard fighters that had some standout performances. You know, basically just kind of a recap of the whole thing, and that way you don't have to watch all the press conferences if you don't want. Try to watch all the post fight interviews. We'll try to circle that all in there. So for as little as just $3 a month, you can join us over there and get access to all that content. Gonna look at start doing some other stuff as well. I was thinking maybe like
nudies.
Other than I know you keep wanting to send out these nudes. I'm not really wanting to send out the nudes.
Watch the pledge count drop
quite dramatically. Right away. Shut down instantly. I was thinking, I don't know, maybe like a live Q&A every week or something like that, you know. So kind of added little interaction we can do over there. Now that we're starting to grow that community, because we started to have a lot of fun discussion in the comment section.
Early Sunday morning grumpy coffee after a fight night would be awesome.
No, early Sunday morning will not be the time to do that. But yeah, like a live Q&A. Like I said, we started as the community's starting to grow a little bit, you know, we've had some interactions in the comment section and that sort of stuff, and it's fun discussion. So I thought maybe like kind of a live discussion might be fun. By the way, shout out to recent additions to the community. Kevin Wilson.
Yeah.
Fellow Buckeye fan.
Yes, Kevin. Thank you very much.
I know you like that. And I'm going to
mess
this
up.
He's the one
I said like the fourth stooge, right?
That's right.
That's right. I'm sending you a virtual eye poke. Isn't that what they do?
He said you look like the fourth stooge.
I'm the sexy stooge.
By the way, I'll probably mess this up, so I apologize. But
yeah, you're going to fuck this up.
Saren Mulryan?
Yeah, that's good.
I don't know. Hit me up, dude. Tell me how to say it so I say it right from now on. I'll repeat it next week just to say it the right way.
Mulryan.
I apologize. But thank you.
Yeah.
It means a lot. All right, UFC on ESPN 12 is this week.
If it's Sharon?
Don't.
Maybe the CIA is like, shh. All right, you guys tell me what you think. C-I-A-R-A-N. That could be Sharon.
No.
All right, maybe not. Well, how did you say it?
Sharon? Sharon?
Sharon.
I'm so sorry.
It does look like it, though.
I'm so sorry.
Maybe it's Chiarin.
Chiarin Mulryan.
Chiarin Mulryan. That was like Italian and Irish or something in there. Yeah.
Hit me up. Let me know how to say it so I don't butcher it. I apologize. But thank you for signing up. I really do appreciate that. We both do. UFC on ESPN 12 is this week. Poirier versus Hooker. I will be watching it from home. By the way, 2 p.m. Pacific start on the prelims, 5 p.m. start on the main card. I'll be banging out that and a half in as an early night. So I'm looking forward to that. Main event is spectacular. Dustin Poirier versus Dan Hooker. Virtual media day was today. We watched those interviews all together. We've been prepping for this. I'm excited for this fight. I don't see how any MMA fan wouldn't be excited for this fight. Fantastic lightweight fight. I just don't see any way it's not an exciting clash. You know, the interviews today, both those guys are kind of professional. They're not big trash talkers. They're kind of buttoned up in the way they handle things. They're respectful. But I think that's what's great about this. We don't need to fake sell this. I think Dan Hooker just said, look, neither one of us has been in a boring fight ever. Like, you know, this is gonna deliver. I like fights like that. We don't need to manufacture anything. It's a big fight in the division. Still kind of trying to sort out where everybody stands underneath Justin Gaethje and Khabib Nurmagomedov. And so, man, this looks like it's going to be a big one on paper in terms of meaning. A fun one on paper in terms of how the fight will probably play out. And listen, I'm torn on this one, man, because man, Dustin Poirier, obviously, you know, incredible boxing, man. He's been in some great fights, man. He's just a dogged fighter. You know he's going to be there. You know he's going to push the pace. You know he's going to be aggressive. Fighting for the first time in, about 9 months, I guess, since the loss to Khabib Nurmagomedov. Meanwhile, you got Dan Hooker, who is really, honestly, has become one of my favorites in his career, man. I love talking to him. I love watching him fight. He's exciting. You know, he had a hard-fought decision over Paul Felder back in February. Man, it's funny because Poirier is the favorite here, and I understand why, of course. But I am a little surprised there's as much gap as there is. And it's funny because the gap has been coming in, like, later. Like, it's not like it's – I mean, a lot of people are leaning on Poirier right now.
What's the odds right now?
Minus 230 for Dustin Poirier, plus 190 for Dan Hooker.
Where did it start at?
Started out as minus 175 for Dustin Poirier.
Wow, some money.
And it's gotten bet down, and it's main – the movement's been within the last 2 weeks. Obviously, there wasn't a lot of wagering movement for a while when we weren't having any events. I don't think we knew if this fight was going to happen. I know for the longest time, you know, we had it listed on our calendar, but I didn't think Dan was going to be able to get into the country, so I didn't think we were going to have it. But anyway, I'll be honest with you. I'm kind of I like the chances that Dan brings to the table here. You know, he's kind of the – not to say that that Poirier's not in form, but, you know, he's only fought once in the last 14 months, and it was a loss. Now, granted, against an entirely different style of opponent.
Yeah.
But, you know, Dan Hooker has kind of been battle-tested. I know that, and this is a weird thing to even talk about, I know that Hooker's gym was closed just like everybody, but I do wonder, you know, New Zealand has, I mean, they've kicked ass on this thing, right? You know what I mean?
They're crushing it.
They
right
got
now.
Done with COVID. So I do wonder if, you know, the restrictions were lighter. And that's probably something I would have talked about a little bit more had I actually been able to work this week. But was his training camp a little bit more robust is what I'm saying. You know what I mean? Did he have a little bit more options because the restrictions were less because of how good they've done? I mean, they're already having sporting events with crowds in them again, which is crazy. So, you know, did he have access to more training partners and like I said, a more robust and normal training camp? I don't know. So I ended up in my official picks leaning towards Dan Hooker and taking Dan Hooker, but I'm not here to try to tell everybody, guys, I've got this thing so sorted out, I don't even understand why people are giving Poirier a chance. I'm not trying to say that, but I ended up going with Dan Hooker.
And I did as well, and I will explain why so much less better than you did. I mean, one, I think Dustin's always been a huge favorite of Junkie's, always been great to us. I love everything about Dustin. He's just a good human being. He's a good dude. I've been lucky enough to have drinks, you know, when both of us haven't really been working, and you just appreciate the kind of guy that he is. He's a family guy. You know, I want him to win. I want him to do great things, and regardless
can't
of how
cheer
I
for him. You know, can't not cheer for him.
You know, and even though I didn't pick Hooker, I didn't pick Poirier, and I went with Hooker. Part of it was, even though, like you said, I mean, Dustin is still firing at such a high level, and he's such a badass. I just when you know, right now Hooker's is on the way up. His momentum is going so high. He's fighting better than he's ever been fighting. And part of it, I looked at Dustin, even though his last fight was against Khabib and it was for a title, this is that fight after the loss of mm-hmm. going for a title. He put everything into it, and that fight meant so much to him. You could see it in his eyes.
Heartbroken.
You know, he was completely heartbroken after that, understandably. And that doesn't mean he wouldn't put effort into this, but it's got to feel like there's less shine for this fight in his eyes, because this is that first fight to show that, yeah, I'm still at the top. I'm still grinding. I'm starting my way back to the, you know, that title fight. And part of that, so it's not the Dustin that's, you know, been on this streak, that's been firing through, you know, and then going against this young kid that's just, well, he's not the youngest, but whatever, but this guy that's just a dynamo right now. And Dan has just constantly been surprised me with his striking and his toughness. He's been tested, and that City Kickboxing thing, I mean, especially with Israel, yes. Those guys have dialed it in so well right now that I think that camp is a bit underrated, even though if you can be underrated with having champs. I just think right now that they are doing things so well. They're doing a really good job of breaking down their opponents. You know, and the thing about Dustin's, there's plenty of tape out there for them to see. I think Dan's going to be able to kind of stay away from the areas that are good for Dustin. He's still going to be able to strike, but I think he's going to have a decent job of controlling where the fight goes. And I just think that Dustin, this is a really super tough fight to go into right after having the Khabib fight. I almost would have rather him fought somebody that maybe wasn't right there in contention.
Go down the ladder a little bit,
because regardless, if he takes a loss here, it's going to knock him even further down. I almost would have rather that he had a easier fight to build back up into that, you know, title shot, because there's no guarantee that the winner of this is going to get the title shot either.
No, definitely not. They'll probably at least need another fight.
Yeah, so I would almost rather that he had an easier fight, but that's me loving on Dustin and liking Dustin. I want Dustin to get these W's.
And he may.
And he may still get it, you know. And that's the, you know, that's the great thing about this sport, is that, you know, there's these ones where it's always the up-and-coming kid that's just blowing everybody away, and then you have the veteran. Just look at Jim Miller and what Jim Miller did in his last fight. I mean, it just goes to show that, you know, the veterans will always shine and will always have these moments. And that could happen here. But I just went with the guy that's riding the momentum.
I agree.
That whole camp is just crushing it right now.
I agree. Look, the key for Poirier is going to be pressure. It's going to be getting inside, I think. I don't think you want to stand on the outside with Dan Hooker. He's going to have a little bit longer frame to work with. And, you know, you got to be wary of the knees with Hooker as well, leg kicks as well. He's got a lot of weapons.
And he's got a hell of a chin.
He does, man. He really does. So, man, I'm loving this fight. Cannot wait. I lean towards the upset here, but by the way, funny because, I mean, I use the word kid a lot, too, because we're old. But it's funny because
they're all kids to us.
It is funny. So Hooker, by the way, is 30, which, okay, he's not a kid. Hilarious. But here's what's insane. Poirier is 31.
Oh, my goodness.
What? How is that possible?
It's because we've been watching him since he was 16.
Yeah, I've been watching him for a decade, man. It's crazy. So love this main event. I'll be honest, I love the co-main event as well. Mickey Gall versus Mike Perry. And I want to be honest here, man. Another line that I was surprised to see. Not that I wager a lot, but I don't wager at all on MMA. But Mike Perry at -320 versus +260 Mickey Gall. And I get it. I mean, Mike Perry's striking and power could absolutely ruin Mickey Gall in the opening round. No question about it. But listen, if Mickey Gall can drag this out a little bit and he can get this, you know, get into some grappling exchanges, I think it's clear that Mickey Gall's grappling, is far superior to Mike Perry's. And I'll be honest with you, man, this whole training situation with Mike Perry of, you know, not having a team and having his girlfriend as his lone corner, it may not matter. He may go out there and smash Mickey Gall in the first round, and that's that. You know what I mean? But even just all the things like tonight, the weight cut, the weight recovery, the psychological aspect of it. And I don't know his girlfriend, so I'm not trying to say anything about her. I don't know anything about her. She may be the – I just can't imagine that her MMA knowledge is, you know, up to par with, you know, professional mixed martial arts teams. And so I'm not even thinking.
Or to be able to help keep him on his weight cut. Like, when he was describing the weight cut, it seemed like he had a lot of work to do, you know, even though it looked like he was pushing the bulk of what he was needed to drop to tomorrow morning.
Right.
But you need somebody that could keep you on, like, that knows what you need to be doing. So when you're in that moment of where you're a little depleted, maybe you're not thinking right, you need that person to say, okay, let's get up. We got to get moving.
That's it.
We got to go to the next thing. Is she going to be that, or is she just going to be sitting there?
And I think about, especially, man, you know, right now, you know, everybody's kind of, especially in this situation, because in this COVID-19 environment, you know, you can't go out and just walk around and do whatever. You got to stay there. Man, you know, that night before, the morning of, you know, a coach that's been with you that understands the sport, that understands the game, they psychologically know what you need. They know how to handle you, whether it be give you your space or give you a pep talk or whatever. And again, and I'm not trying – I know nothing about his girlfriend, so I'm not trying to speak to her. I'm just thinking what I'm speaking of as kind of a newcomer to the environment or a stranger to the environment. They come in, and they may think that, you know, you need comfort and discussion all day and pep talks and whatever, and you're like – dude, I need to veg out and not think and you know what I mean? It's just all those
little – I need
to lay
on the ground, cover me with towels, and leave me alone.
That's it. You know, and you know, the morning of the fight, the you know, what to do in the locker room, how to get somebody mentally ready, all those things. Man, I get it. As far as once the bell sounds, all right, Mike Perry knows how to fight. He's a scrapper, man, and he could absolutely go out and devastate Mickey Gall in the opening round. That could absolutely happen. He's got that. So I'm not saying that, man – dude, having your girlfriend as your lone corner, that is a guarantee that you're going to lose your fight. It's not. He could still do it. He could still impress. But it scares me a little bit. All these variables, all these things that in the days leading up, the hours leading up, even during the fight. I mean, if it does go to round two, do you know where to put the stool? Do you know how to apply the ice? Do you know how to – it scares me, man. It scares me. So for that reason – I actually went with Mickey Gall here, man. I know that's a big upset pick.
Yeah.
But those are so many question marks and oddities to me that it scares me a little bit. So let's do this. I it's kind of funny because you mentioned a lot of the discussion of the weight cut. So this is Mike Perry's virtual media day. I cut out a lot of the questions about the weight cutting or about his weight, because I figure by the time most people listen to this, he'll probably have already been on the scale. So I figured, you know, plus it was about an 18-minute interview or virtual media day session. I wanted to trim it down a little bit. So you won't hear those bits that Cold Coffee was referring to, but you will hear his reactions to a lot of other stuff. Our Nolan King actually kicked off the session. You'll hear former MMA Junkie staffer Stephen Morocco on here asking a few questions
as well. Yeah, the
sheriff. The deputy, sir.
Deputy.
The deputy. He is the deputy editor of MMA Fighting Now, so it's Deputy Steve. He's in there as well, so you hear some familiar voices. But before we go any further on this and get Cold Coffee's thoughts on the fight, let you listen for yourself. Here was the virtual media session with Platinum Mike Perry.
Hey, Mike, appreciate the time today, man. A lot's been made coming into this fight about the fact that this weekend you're not going to have coaches in your corner. You're going to have your girlfriend. And after this, you said that, you know, you're going to go on to kind of form a team around you. And I think this is very interesting. But for this camp, where did you train? You know, was it any different, this training camp, compared to the other ones that you've done in the past?
I am going to have a coach in my corner, but that coach happens to be my girlfriend. She'll be coaching. And you know, I can't say it was much different than any other training camp I've ever had. Got my road work in. Got good food in my diet. Drank a lot of water. And, you know, punching the air, you know. So I had some training partners and some bodies to work with that were down to listen and do it my way. And I'm going to go in there on Saturday night and do it my way.
And did you train at a particular facility for this fight? I know with the pandemic, some fighters have had to pull out some, you know, weird backyard stuff. So kind of, you know, where were you preparing for this fight?
I was in Lubbock, Texas, getting ready for this fight. I did travel to Florida for a little bit. I watched a lot of episodes of Naruto. I watched the whole three seasons of the Avatar, the Airbender. And that was good for, like, mental training. And then I walked around Universal Studios and Islands of Adventure, and we went swimming at Volcano Bay. That was good training. And we ate at lots of restaurants, and we ordered good, healthy food. Lots of big steaks.
That's great. And you seem very mentally relaxed coming into this fight. You know, is it something about the matchup you like here? You know, just talk to me about Mickey Gall a little bit. What do you expect come Saturday?
I expect to get paid. Let's keep it simple, bro. Get paid. It ain't nothing to it but to do it, man. What can I say? I'm sure he's trained hard. Good for you, bud. You'll have a good life. It'll be healthy. Eat another salad. And that's not going to fix your broken jaw that you get this Saturday, though.
And earlier we spoke to Mickey, and he kind of made some comments that he thought you might have regressed a little bit. Do you have any sort of response to that?
You know, I don't know what regressed means. What, he pull back? What does that mean?
Saying that your skills have gone backwards a little bit, that you've diminished over time a little.
Well, if that's he thinks how martial arts works, he must have fell off the bike a couple times.
And my last question for you, man, how do you get it done on Saturday?
Knockout. I'm going to knock his ass out. I'm going to knock Mickey Gall out.
One of the other things that Mickey said is that he's a low-key Mike Perry fan. He loves your style. He finds you entertaining. What's your response to that?
Was all that shit you was talking, boy? Keep that same energy.
And then last one for me. You did call him, I think a while back, a weak-ass opponent. Is that just based on the level of guys that you've been fighting versus his level of competition?
No, it's just facts. Saturday night is how I stack up against him. It's how he stacks up against me. It has nothing to do with anybody we've ever fought before on either side. Any man can win when they step in there, but on Saturday night, it's just me versus him. Him versus me.
I know you've been critical of fans. You've been critical of media heading into this fight. Are you happy to be here right now talking to us?
Hell no. I'm not happy to sit here and talk to y'all when I could be laying down watching TV, cuddling with my girl, or walking through Vegas, maybe, you know, getting some sun, cutting some weight, because I still got some pounds to get off. But y'all like to talk to us on the very last day.
Well, I apologize, sir. Quick question. I talked to Mickey a couple weeks ago. He didn't really truly remember how it started, but it seems like this fight between you and Mickey has been discussed, or there's been some back and forth between you guys for a while now. Do you remember how this sort of rivalry began with Mickey Gall and when you wanted this fight?
Yeah, y'all starting it right now, talking about we ever had a rivalry. He's a low-key Mike Perry fan, remember? And then he wants to get where I am or something, or he wants to fight me until he signed that line. Then he changed his whole tone, didn't he? But he started calling me out. He thought it was a good fight for him. But when he saw the cowboy armbar, well, his jiu-jitsu's not as good as 36-year-old Cowboy Cerrone, who's been snapping arms since the UFC began. So.
And then last thing for me, you know, you're a fighter's fighter. I'm sure you're excited to just get back in that cage on Saturday night and compete. And there's a lot said about the approach to this fight and some of the things you're doing. But one thing I have noticed about you, Mike, is that you are who you are. And I feel like despite all the, you know, quote unquote controversy and all of that, I feel like you're in a really good place right now. Like you're happy with where you're at right now. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I'm happy with telling all you losers to go fuck yourselves. That makes me happy. And I might not necessarily be talking to you. If that offends you, you must be a loser. You must be going to fuck yourself, because if it doesn't pertain to you, then it shouldn't affect you, right?
Nah, I feel okay, Mike. Thank you for the time, man. Good luck on Saturday.
Well, one of the things that you said that you wanted to do around the time of that submission grappling match is sort of get back into this winning mindset and start to, you know, care to work hard, care about the sport. Do you feel like you've found that place
as you're heading into this fight? Is the training with the or having the girlfriend corner you, is that part of like not taking things so seriously and just sort of being you?
But I am taking it very seriously. I take my life very seriously. This is my life. This is what I do. Why would I want anybody else to get any credit or get that front row seat than the only person that I give a fuck about? Like I don't really get it, bro. It's working out. It's to fight. It's by yourself all the time is what we do. And I got one thing that I fight for.
Which is what? Money?
No, that's a nice addition. But no, man, I fight to be who I am, because who I am gets me the one thing that I fight for. It's my girl, bro.
Have you given her any advice on how to corner you best?
Sit there and enjoy the show.
So she's not going to give you any like fighting advice? She's just going to sit there? If
she gets to the second round, no. Life is fighting advice. We fighting out here every day with this COVID shit and trying to deal with who's rich and who's poor and who's black and who's white. We just keep fighting. Well, I done all the scientific, all the, you know, explanations written down on paper, all this shit about how you should be, how fighting, what this person think you should do in a fight. No, I think I'm the one with the experience and I know how it should go. I just want to feel good. She's just going to be there to make me feel good, make me look good. And if it even goes to the second round, it's because I want her to have time to talk to me in the corner. I want her to give me a kiss and tell me to go get him.
I just have one question for you. Mickey Gall just told us that he loves the smaller cage. What do you think about it?
I just thought of something, bro. That shit was funny. All right. The small cage. Yeah. Whatever. Like, let's go, bud. I don't care how big it is. It's less room for him to run. He wants to tell himself he likes that in there with me. Okay. Well, I'm just going to stand there and we'll see what happens.
What do you think will happen?
He gonna try to throw something and I'm gonna pop his ass, and then he gonna try to grab something and I'm gonna pop his ass again, and then he gonna fall down and I'm gonna pop his ass one more time, and the ref gonna be pulling me off of him. I ain't even gonna let the ref pull me off. I'm gonna stay there and try to pop him a couple more.
Okay, Mike, thank you very much and good luck on Saturday.
Thanks.
That's all we have for you today, Mike. Thank you.
Oh, man. You remember the guy who told Floyd, he was like, you catching a rabbit. You the champion. And Floyd was like, I don't know what you said, bro, but I know you said I'm the champion. I like that. I like that shit, bro.
All right, the one and only Platinum Mike Perry. Cold Coffee, I know you're watching that today. I don't know, man. Again, I can see Mike Perry just go out and starching Mickey Gall early, but what do you think, man? I mean, is this situation that he's in? I mean, he's always a character, right? It's not like you can watch one interview and be like, oh my gosh, Mike Perry. He's always a character like that, you know. Yeah. But I don't know. Are you concerned, or am I overthinking this a little bit?
I mean, I would be the biggest thing I'm concerned of is just the weight cut. Probably, I think once the fight gets going, Mike's going to fight how Mike's going to fight. You know, if he gets to the ground, even if he had a decent or a really good jiu-jitsu coach in his corner to help him, you know, tell him how to get out of certain things, I think Mike probably would Mike anyways. You know, he sort of had me sold once he started talking about watching the Naruto. You know, at that point,
the anime
I realized
reference got you excited.
At that point, I realized he's done the right things for this camp, and so I can't remember who I picked. But after he said that, I was like, "Oh, okay. Well, obviously, I hope I picked Mike Perry for this one because I love that show."
I mean, I love the fact that he was still, he's having fun with this fight week. I think he's having fun with this whole camp, this whole, you know, event. He's just having fun. He seems like a guy that, while most of us are, you know, want to break down and say how bad it's going to be because he clearly hasn't thought about, you know, what he needs to have in his corner. You know, here's a guy that we've heard even from, like, Diego that just said, let me do me. If I know that I want to have this guy in my corner, that I'm happy, you know, with them in my corner, if I'm doing what I want and I feel good being in this, just be happy for me. And in that situation,
there's something to be said for that.
I've kind of taken it like this. I'm like, if this is what Mike needs to feel comfortable to get in there and just to, you know, feel good, then, you know, what am I going to say? But I'm just mainly worried about the, after hearing him today talking about all the weight he needed to do, I would just think that that was the part I was worried about. But again, this is ultimately the coaches haven't done the cut for him all this time. He and his body has went through these cuts. So it's not like it's his first rodeo of trying to cut weight. So if he knows what he needs to do to get there and he makes weight, then I'm not going to be worried about the fight.
Yeah.
You know, if he has a heck of a time and he misses weight by a lot tomorrow, then I'll be a little bit maybe more worried about the fight, because then I'd feel like, okay, if that part is dropping off, what else has lacked this whole training camp? I mean, if he's coming in feeling good, his body feels good, his chin feels good because he maybe hasn't taking the sparring that he normally would take, you know, so he's got a little bit more recharge on his chin, then who knows? I mean, and again, this fight could end really, really quickly. It's just, you would kind of want that veteran ear in his corner so that if it gets to the point where, okay, Mickey's taking my punches, I'm starting to get a little tired, what mode do I switch into? And that's when you kind of want to have
a little bit
somebody there.
Advice, a little bit of experience. I mean, like, yeah, you brought up Diego
to
Sanchez.
To remind you of what you can do.
You brought up Diego Sanchez. And I, look, I thought – I know it didn't necessarily strike well with Joshua Fabia, but I always said I've always said if Diego wants him in his corner, man, if that's what makes him happy, like you said, yes, I still would like to see somebody with a little bit of veteran experience just to be able to give those fine-tuned adjustments.
Yeah, it was just, wait, Mike, when he said something today, when he's like, you know, I found myself when I'd hear all this stuff and I was trying to do things that these people in my corner were telling me and it wasn't working, and I realized that maybe that was part of the problem. So in his mind, I'm overthinking it. Yeah, I mean, and then if it means that I get rid of them to take that portion out of it, to get me out of my head, just to get me back to my primal self that has worked for him for so long, then it's worth a shot. And if he goes in there and he just literally just dominates, they're all going to be like, well, do you, Mike? You know, it's
so
just
true.
It's just the unfortunate side of that. If it doesn't, you know, he's going to hear all these people, you know, say, oh, you could have did better if you did this. But at the end of the day, if it's him going home to him and his girlfriend and he's happy with what he decided and he was happy with that decision, he doesn't need to please anybody else. So at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what we all say if he loses.
Oh, that's for damn sure.
As long as he's happy and he's going in there and he's comfortable, because he's jumping into a situation that could be absolutely frightening. And if this is what he needs to do to go in there with no fear and just to feel relaxed.
Yeah, to be clear, I'm not passing judgment on his decisions. Obviously, everybody's got to do what makes them. Again, we've talked, I mean, this. I think that's one of the main focuses we always talk about, what a mentally difficult sport this is. So whatever makes him happy, but if I'm just breaking down X's and O's and how I would build a camp, and I'm like, are you going to get everything you need? Like I said, you know, those, you know, are you – I mean, hell, we talked about, you know, Drysdale and Rozhkov to start off. I mean, are you going to get any kind of exchange like that? I mean, it's just, that's, you know.
How many times, you know, I always think too, Craig Jackson,
right,
who I think is one of the smartest coaches.
Absolutely.
How many times have you seen when he goes in the corner, he spends half the time doing what?
Calming him down. Getting
breathe.
Him to breathe. Yep. Relax. Breathe.
So you got one of the most brilliant coaches in the world, but what does he do in the corner? He tells his fighter to breathe.
Yeah.
I think she can handle that.
Wow. That's not where I thought you were going with that. That's pretty funny, though. That's good. All right, listen. Overall, man, the card, you know, not as deep as it was last week, but still some interesting matchups for me. Brendan Allen versus Kyle Daukaus. I'm going to homer for Kyle Daukaus a little bit here. A little Cage Fury champ. He's a CFSC vet. Obviously, I love working with those guys out there. So I'm a homer and hope for the best. These guys, it's a pretty interesting matchup. They've got a lot of similar skill sets. And Brendan Allen, maybe a little bit more battle-tested. But Kyle Daukaus, I think he is a talented fighter. So looking forward to seeing his USC debut. Maurice Greene versus John Volante. John Volante moving up to heavyweight.
Woo!
Man, I'm interested to see how this works. John, by the way, if you want to watch his full Media Day interview, virtual Media Day interview, it's on MMA Junkies YouTube. John, as you would expect, who's one of the funniest guys you'll ever meet, is just so open and honest. Yeah. Like, why move up
John's
to heavyweight?
John,
he's like, you know, kind of tough to train during this pandemic, and, you know. He's like, somebody doing that, and he's like, I won't be, you know, won't be walking around with my shirt off much, but you know, I don't think I can make it down to 205 because I'm a little pudgy right now, so we're going to heavyweight.
He is awesome.
That he's is hilarious. Yeah, I love
is,
the matchup.
He's a character.
Maurice Greene, of course, here's the thing, is huge. I mean, 6'7".
Yeah.
He cuts to make 265. You know, he's had back-to-back losses, so he's in a need for a win. And by the way, it's funny because Maurice Greene went after John Volante, and I had not seen this anywhere. I wonder if John even knows it, that he played football with Maurice Greene's older brother at Hofstra.
Yeah.
I'd not heard that storyline anywhere. I mean, not that that changes anything. It just kind of makes it interesting. Like, this dude played football with my brother.
And he raised a good point because somebody asked him, like, oh, did your brother tell any stories? Did your brother give me any tips?
Yeah.
Like, it's a totally different sport.
That was funny. He's like, what are you talking about?
He's like, he said, John's jockstrap smelled wonderful. Like, what is he going to tell them? It's
but
a different sport.
I did like what Maurice said after that. He did say, but it just goes to show you, man, this dude's been, like, in athletics with bigger people his whole life. So it's not like him coming up to heavyweight like, oh, my gosh, he's going to be intimidated here. Like, nah, dude, he's played with bigger people his whole life. So I thought that was interesting. Julian DeRosa versus Sean Woodson. Sean Woodson certainly has a little bit of talent. Julian DeRosa, Juicy J, trains here in Vegas, so benched in that one. But to me, I think that the one that I'm most fired up for outside of those top two fights is Luis Pena versus Kama Worthy, the violent Bob Ross, who looks to have a ton of talent. Kama Worthy is a fun fighter as well. This is going to be your featured prelim of the night. I don't even know if featured prelim matters anymore now that they're all on the same channel.
Yeah.
But this could be a fun fight. I think stylistically, this could be fireworks. So I think that those are that to me is the one I'm most excited about. But I'll give you a couple other ones I'm looking out for early on the prelims.
Mm-hmm. You are.
I already know which one you're
fight.
Looking forward to.
All right,
let's just get the cold
night.
Copies first. Jinyu Frey versus Kay Hansen. Jinyu Frey, former Invicta atomweight champ. By the way, she fought in Tough Enough as well, so she came through the Tough Enough ranks here, amateur here in Las Vegas. Very, very talented fighter, man, and obviously appeals to cold coffee
and
as well.
She's gorgeous.
Yeah, she's not hard on the eyes, that's for sure. But she was an atomweight, so I mean, she obviously the UFC does not have an atomweight division, so she's moving up. But it's interesting too because her opponent Kay Hansen, just 20 years old, which is I love seeing the youth movement come into the UFC. So I think that is one I definitely have my eye on. Cole Coffey watching it for completely different reasons, but he's interested as well. But the other
they're
one,
they're both badasses and they're cute.
The other one that I was going to point out, and I'm worried that I'm going to say his name wrong. It's Ramiz Brahima. It's Brahima or Brahima? It's the J is silent.
It's brah.
I can't remember if it's Brahima or Brahima. I think it's Brahima.
The whole end is just silent. Just brah.
Yeah, brah. But anyway, by the way, originally from New York, but trains at Fortis MMA. So we always love the Fortis MMA crew.
Yeah.
But legit talent. A lot of first round stoppages. Very aggressive style. But the guy's got a crazy story too because he was prepping to be on Dana White's Contender Series Season 2, and they found a tumor behind his eye.
Oh,
so it
geez.
Was like basically between his eye and his brain, and he had to get that removed. So, but it was because of the medicals he was having to go on Dana White's Contender Series that they found this.
Wow.
And potentially, I mean, I don't know
potentially
if you say,
saved his life.
I was going to say, I don't know if you saved.
Saved
but,
his
mean,
life or saved his sight.
At like, least saved tumors, his, yeah, saved his career. I would say saved his life, saved his career for sure.
That's
so,
awesome.
Pretty crazy, right? Like, you're getting on the Contender Series, and so now you're fighting in the UFC. So that's a story and a fighter that I'm super excited about as well. So
that's pretty cool.
Other than I had a feeling the Jinyu Frey matchup was going to stand out to you. But anything else on this card outside of those top two that we talked about that you're fired up for?
I mean, definitely the Pena Worthy fight I think is pretty awesome. Yeah. That's going to be a good one. But I mean, Jordan Griffin, Yusuf Zalal, that's a good fight. Mm-hmm. Let's see. I guess that's on the main card. But the Maurice Greene and John Volante, I'm super, super excited to see it because it's two guys that I just want to have beers with both of them and, like, hang out with them. They literally – I enjoy every interview these guys have done. But, yep. The start of the night, I'm super, super excited for the fight of the night for sure.
All right, so that'll be that. Like I said, I will have an and a half episode over at patreon.com/MMAroadshow. I'll get to have it pretty early in the night, too, because it's kind of an earlier card. I like that.
It's crazy because it's still, even though the night ends, I think I still work till like...
You still end up working late because the car, it's just you don't end up working until like 5 in the morning, which is nice. You end up working until like 2.
I will try to put it for those. I remember you guys probably already... I was able to stream the post-fight presser, so it's kind of... You know, even though the UFC is putting on there, you guys come watch the post-fight presser on our stream.
I mean, you could watch it on the UFC, but why? Watch it on MMA Junkies.
I'm closer.
Yeah. You can check out his new camera that he's got. You know, it's important. Watch his instead. All right, real quick update. Fight Island. I think I'm going to be there. I'm just not sure yet, which is crazy.
Do you have your hula? Like, what do they wear? What's the hula skirts? For the islands, like what do the people wear?
Like the grass skirt?
Grass skirt, yeah. You got a grass skirt for it?
I don't think they wear a grass skirt in Abu Dhabi, bro. but no, listen. So this is kind of
fight desert. They should call it.
This is kind of weird because I don't know if I'm going for sure. I think I'm going. But
so you're saying you're going to show up and hopefully they'll let you in.
Well, no, the problem is because I'm on furlough. My employers can't reach out to me to confirm that it's approved. So they've been having discussions about doing it because we had to budget for everything.
Right.
And here's the interesting. This is actually I'm sure you saw the report that Nolan had on how I should say Nolan King of MMA Junkie had on how things are going to be done. So part of the deal is there's a charter plane from Las Vegas that leaves. And it's going to leave sometime next week, late next week. I believe the date that they were eyeing is Friday, July the 3rd. I think that's the plan, to fly from Vegas to Abu Dhabi. But here's the thing is, we're not allowed to accept travel from the UFC. But we have to be on this charter because that's part of the bubble. So it was pretty interesting process. The USA Today brass, our ethics committee, had to meet on this and talk about how to handle it. So, So my understanding is we're working with the UFC to basically, even though they're, you know, just booking a plane, to figure out, like, what would one ticket cost, you know what I mean, and pay for that.
Yeah.
And so that's basically the hurdle that had to get over is we have to figure out a way to do this in a way that we're not compromising our ethics in any way that, like, hey, man, just jump on. We got you. You know what I mean? And
that's why I have no ethics.
Since we got you, you mind writing this? Yeah. So they're working on that. So I was waiting on confirmation for them. But here's the thing is nobody can email me from our company because I'm on furlough and I'm not allowed to. So I think I'll be there. I think I'll know for sure on Sunday. But just in case anybody was wondering about how that's going to work, I think I'm going to be there. I have filled out an application. I've been approved by the UFC.
Mm-hmm.
It's just about USA Today, our parent company, approving all the methods and the budget and all those things, which I think is going to be done. But unfortunately, I can't say for sure now, which is a weird position, but I did want to update everybody. And then the last thing that I wanted to talk about was obviously the most important, but I wanted to get
the fridge.
The fridge, we talked about that right away. I mean, that was the lead. But I say this for the last because I felt like it was important to get you to weigh in on this. But what do you think? I mean, this is changing time. I mean, we talked about COVID-19, uh-oh, right? We've talked about COVID-19. Okay. That's obviously been a huge impact. The Black Lives Matter has obviously been another big thing in our society right now. And man, it feels like societal change is being made. People are working diligently to try to improve racial equality, which if you don't stand for racial equality, you're weird. We're all the same, dude, right? So stand for it. But, you know, we're seeing a lot of these statues coming down and things that were kind of like racist and you know, people saying, hey, we don't want to glorify those anymore. Let's get rid of this. And then it came up.
Flavortown?
They want to rename Columbus, Ohio, Flavortown. In honor of Guy Fieri.
I had you know what's funny is that I didn't realize that he was born there because I always associate him with Vegas because I know he went to school here. And then Agent H has sort of educated me a little bit on how he's moved around, even though he was born in Columbus, then moved out, to, I think, to California, and then came out here to Vegas for school or whatever. And then, you know, what's interesting is, you know, we always call Columbus, some of us call it C-Bus for short. And I was thinking, like, well, I was like, does that mean I'd call Flavortown F-Town? You know, it's definitely one of those things that, you know, my hometown, I will have always been raised in Columbus. If society deems that, you know, it was named after a guy that doesn't deserve it, you know, and has this sordid past, as we've come to have been whitewashed our history, you know, of what he was credited for, which has been proven time and time again that he did none of that and that he was kind of an asshole. If the name changes, I'm not going to cry about it. You know, Columbus will be where I was raised. I can't say I was raised in Flavortown, you know. And that's just because, you know, the town wasn't, and the people I know and the people I love weren't, and it had nothing to do with the fact of the guy that the town was named after.
I was going
to
say, I mean, I don't think it's funny. And I'm kind of making light of it. I don't want to make light of the situation as a whole. I mean, I definitely heard about, you know, why Christopher Columbus isn't the guy that people think he was and all that. But it is funny because I'm like, when you hear Columbus, Ohio, like, I think of Ohio State University. I don't think of Christopher Columbus.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Call it Buckeye Town or something. Or there's guys like John Glenn who are, well, he's Ohio. I'd rather they named it something like after him, like Glenville or something, as opposed to fucking Flavortown. but I mean, there is some truth to how they're sort of trying to justify it. It is one of the biggest food test markets. Like, I remember when I BW3s used to have like these garlic wedges, which I absolutely loved, but that don't exist on the market. You know, but that was one of the test foods that they did there, and all this other stuff.
Buffalo Wild Wings was invented in Columbus, Ohio.
So I mean, like, man, I Columbus will always be home. But I mean, if this is what it needs, if that's what's needed, happen to start the catalyst. If things like that need to go, it is what it is. You know, I'd probably feel a lot more strongly if I lived there, because then I'd have to change all the phrases. I'd have to say I lived in Flavortown. But it is what it is. But I think there's a hell of a lot, you know, I like Guy Fieri a lot, but I think there's probably some better other people that we could probably throw
like
in the mix.
Like, that's the best we could come up with? Like,
I'm
that's
sure
the
there's
most
probably
we've
a
ever
few,
produced?
Yeah. I'm sure there's a few Nobel Peace Prize winners somewhere from that area that
I mean,
we could probably
I mean, from a marketing
go.
Gimmick, though, right? Like, from like a tourist perspective or something. Like, then
it's
you can do, like, all kinds of restaurant festivals.
The food's there is amazing. I always said that Columbus has one of the best music scenes in the U.S. that doesn't get credit. I'd love it if they called it, like, Music Town or something. Something a little bit better to where somebody is like, oh, let's go to that town where it's about food, which it is about food, but it's not named after food, you know, but it is what it is. But, yeah, it is. It's kind of putting the light, in, you know, to a very serious thing that's going on. I mean, it's a movement, that's not the only place that there's a lot of talk. That talk has happened in other places, so... It could happen.
I just knew that one was going to hit close to home.
Oh, it does. It does. But, you know, it is what it is. I mean, I'll always have memories of the people and the places there. And I guess when it all boils down to it, you can call it Flavortown and it'll still be home. I just have to rephrase all my cool phrases that we used to have.
I do like F-Town, though. It just sounds kind of hard.
F-Town is hard, dog. It's still the 614, dog, regardless. It's the 614.
That's good. Now, listen, I had a bunch of chops on that. Not to make light of the Black Lives Matter movement. It is important. I think – I will say this, man. I think now that we're kind of past the looting stuff, That bothered me a little bit because, as we said, you know, that's not really pushing for change. The same way we're talking about fighters need to organize if they really want to make change. Looting doesn't necessarily make change.
Yep.
But these continued protests, continued discussion, it's good, man. Because yep. I just, again, as we've said it before, and I don't never want to make this a political thing, but man, we've been fortunate to travel the world and hang out with fans of all colors, races, nationalities, and we all love a sport, and we all love drinking beer, and we all have a good time. Like, dude, if you don't understand that at the end of the day, we're all the same people, man. Like, that we all need to be. I just don't understand how – I saw somebody the other day that was just like, I mean, how can you be like, oh, I think, you know, racial equality is important. And you go, nah, not me. You know, like, what? Yeah. Of course. We're all the same, man. We're all the same. So definitely don't want to make light of the movement as a whole, but the Flavortown aspect of it just made me crack up.
Oh, man. There is some good food there. But, yeah, hopefully the movement keeps going. Right now it's in the change, and I'll only say it for 10 seconds that I won't drag it on. Now that even though the protests have calmed down a little bit, now it's a matter of the politicians and the people in power need to keep that in their mind and keep moving forward, because no one wants to see people have to always take time out of their life to have to go walk the streets and keep it in the forefront of everybody. If the media does their jobs and keeps it in the forefront, if the politicians keep it in front of the people that are making the laws and the momentum's going forward, I would love if people were able to go back and earn their livings knowing that they've passed the torch and that movement has started.
We've made it clear what we expect. We need you to deliver from here.
And then, you know, then hold the politicians, hold the people in power accountable. If the politicians don't ride this out and do something with it, replace them and get ones in there that will listen to the plight and will listen to the movement and move forward. But, you know.
Go vote. Register and vote.
Yeah, I'm so proud of the people that went out there and hit the streets and do whatever, you know, and do what they need to do. But I know they also need to make a living and need to take care of themselves and find time to eat and relax and decompress. So hopefully these politicians and people that we, you know, pay all this money to and are supporting will do the jobs that they're supposed to do and listen to the people and do it so that people can get back to normal lives.
Dig it, man. All right, well, pardon our brief foray into politics.
You start with a Flavortown.
I mean, you know.
How dare you?
It just gets heavy. It just gets heavy when you bring up Flavortown.
It does.
All right, man.
It kind of makes me hungry, though.
we'll turn it back to MMA.
Taco Town?
That's even
having
better.
Taco Night.
I'm
Taco down. Town Taco sounds Town's better. So much better.
It sounds better. All right, listen, like I said, if you want to grab the and a half episode, make sure you join us, patreon.com/MMAroadshow. If not, we'll be back here next week, of course. Until then, let's just say thanks for listening.